It's April, and we're celebrating National Poetry Month. And we're continuing with our theme, Poetry in Unusual Places. Today, I am with my guest, poet Senna Khatib. Senna, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. I'm excited. I'm really excited. I always like a little bit of poetry in the afternoon. All right. So as well as writing poetry, Senna is an inclusion teacher in the Lynn Public School System. She has a degree from Hofstra University in psychology and creative writing. Senna's passion for poetry was ignited 13 years ago amidst the turmoil of the Syrian Revolution, sparking her profound desire to express herself in verse. Now, Senna, I've got some questions for you, and then maybe you will delight us with some of your poetry.
Okay, sounds great.
Okay. My first question, where, when, and how often do you write?
Honestly, anywhere at any time, like whether I'm driving or shopping or about to go to sleep, like I always have a notebook or like my phone near me so that I can put words down. Like if I hear something or if I think of something, I just write it down and then maybe I'll come back to it.
So you do both writing and keyboarding?
Yes, I do.
Okay. And how do you know when one of your poems is done?
I'm not sure if a poem ever really is done. I think that you can always look back. I think I had a professor in college who told me that your poems are never done because like in 15 years, if you look at them, you're going to want to fix them. So I think I kind of like think like that. But sometimes I just feel like it's done.
Okay. And so do you go back to fix your poem or not fix them? I don't know what. Well, fix them, I guess.
Well, one of the poems I'm going to read today, I wrote a few years ago and I looked back at it recently and I kind of realized it could mean something different than what I originally meant. And okay. So then I like read it again and I just kind of fixed it a little bit, just like little edits. But
yeah. Okay, interesting. Okay, and what do you call yourself? Do you call yourself a poet?
So this is a really funny question because my best friend for the longest time was always like, you're a poet. And I told him no. I like didn't like to call myself a poet. I felt like it was a heavy label. But since my book came out, he's been like, well, now you have to. Like, so I guess I am a poet. I usually call myself a writer if people ask. But
but you mainly write poetry?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
One day I'll write. Like, I write short stories and stuff, and maybe one day a book will come out of those. But
yes. Okay. Yeah. So writer rather than poet.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good. And I know it's an odd question, but have you got favorite words?
Since I was 8 years old, one of my favorite words has been defenestrate, which means to throw out a window. I've just always thought that it was really funny that there was a word for that. And I learned the word when my older brother learned it and, of course, told me he was going to defenestrate me. So.
And did he?
No.
Defenestration.
Yes.
So it can be a verb. I'm going to defenestrate you. Oh,
yes.
My goodness.
Which I don't know if that's the proper way to use it, yes. But he was like 10 at the time. So.
Okay. We'll forgive him. Now, you mentioned that professor. Did they give you the best piece of writing advice you ever heard, or was it someone else?
It was someone else.
Okay.
It was a friend I had in college who told me, we were like at a picnic for the poetry club I was in, and someone said something, and she pulls out a notebook, and she wrote it down, and she looked at me, and she was like, anytime you hear a combination of words that you like the way they sound together, write it down. So then like 4 days later, I went and I bought a notebook and now I always have a notebook on me or with me or like.
And so sometimes it's just a combination of words that you like.
Yeah. And then maybe I'll turn that into something else or like, yeah, sometimes it's just something I hear that I'm like, oh, that's kind of a cool, it's kind of a cool sentence. That's kind of fun. So, yeah.
Okay. And have you got any advice to give out?
Well, so people get so worried about writing, like, especially poetry, and like what form you're supposed to use, if it's supposed to rhyme and all of this stuff. So my advice to people with poetry and any writing really is that it's just supposed to be your voice. It's supposed to be you. It doesn't matter if it rhymes or if it's in couplets or iambic pentameter. Like, it's what you want to do. It's how you want to use your voice. So that's my advice.
I like that advice. Yeah. And you don't have to use fancy words like defenestrate.
No, you don't.
You can just use simple language. And that's okay, right?
Yep.
Tell me that's okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, next question is my absolute favorite question. I love to ask everybody. Not everybody likes this question, but I'm going to ask you. You have an imaginary friend. What do you two do together?
So I'm not going to be super creative with my answer because I did have an imaginary friend when I was a kid, and his name was Ducky, and he was a little dog. And we went on a lot of adventures together, mostly being pirates, because I think that was my fixation at the time. Now I would probably add some space adventures too with him, but
keep the same friend.
Yes, keep the same friend. Okay. I keep Ducky. We would go to space, I think.
Oh.
We'd be explorers.
So you've had Ducky for a long time.
Yeah.
And does Ducky come and go in your life?
Not really. I haven't, like, I didn't think about him until this question came up. I was like, I did have one.
Ah,
he was okay. A little green dog.
And he was green.
Yeah, I don't know why.
Did he talk?
No. But I spoke to him and he understood me. He just barked.
Okay. Okay, let's get serious now. So what are you going to read to us today?
So I have a few different poems. This first one I wrote, and I don't know how to pronounce this word. It is another fun word. It's called alexithymia. So I wrote this when I learned this word because it is like not understanding your emotions. It's like not being able to understand emotion or like certain ones. And I recently learned that it's something that's very common with autism, and it's also Autism Awareness Month. So I thought that I would read this poem. And it's just called Alexithymia, or if I'm saying that right. There's a loud pounding, this agitated thump, a daunting, deadly dropping through these caverns of my chest, wailing against these walls of an all too crooked rib cage. And I think that I've always known that something hasn't been quite right here. Yet the words have never fully found my lips. Instead, there's this terrible trembling and a wildfire and a chill in my bones all at once. And I think it's positive or not negative, but still, it could so easily change. And most days, I wish I had a voice that knew how to speak of such things, and appropriately so, a tongue that has danced in this language, a taste of a tango that has dabbled in the world of an acceptance. That yes, there have been accidents that occurred here, battles have been won here, and wars fought all the same. An acceptance that there will always be scars, memories doused in dysfunction of limbs and of trauma that may have forever changed this brain. And in all the definitions lost that may never live here again, perhaps this I've found will help me heal and experience life after fighting and losing and breaking in a new and healthier way.
Nice, powerful way to begin.
So the next one is a long one. It's called, "This Is For You, The Women Who Will Change the World." To the little girl crying on the playground, recovering from a hasty shove given by the boy missing his two front teeth, the boy that your mother will claim has a crush on you, because it is okay for him to translate emotions into this violent act that leads to your tears. And by okay, I mean universally accepted. That maybe he'll get a slap on the wrist, but nothing further, because that's just how it is, she will explain as she brushes off your bloodied knees and battered self-esteem. She will tell you not to cry, that he is just being a boy. He is only doing this because you react, and that is what entertains him, keeps him coming back. Boys will be boys, so it's okay. And again, by okay, I mean universally accepted. Maybe he'll get a stern talking to, but that's all, because that's just how it is, and no use in rocking the boat. She will tell you to swallow your pain, hide your feelings in a little bottle where your heart should be, because you're just being dramatic. Hint, you're always just being dramatic. From the little things to earth-shattering trauma, it doesn't matter. Your vagina takes away your emotional validity. To the little girls that boys push and pull on the playground, I wish I could say it gets better. But darling, this is just the beginning. Soon you will be conditioned not to fight back. Don't argue with a man. Your emotions run too high, and that will show. You have to calm down, chill out, and are you on your period? They will train you to put up with this. You're expected to sit there and look pretty while the men are talking, even when their words cut you, like knives to your throat, stabbing to your chest, to just take it when they kick you up, when they kick you while you're down. To stay quiet as the rest of the world scolds you for your blood spilling out on the carpet, because how dare you? And it was expensive. It doesn't matter that the perpetrator stands there with bloody knife in hand, businessman, head of company. Men with power will always be right when compared to you, a mere woman. And they will call you sneaky, because you have to be, because just existing loudly as a woman makes you too much or a bitch, because knowing what you want and making that clear turn sweet, innocent princess to evil queen, to a malevolent being, to crazy bitch, to evil witch. They will call you names, but will be taken aback if you fight. And you cannot fight because the shock will be too much for their faint hearts. To the little girls who have yet to have their brains washed by society, do not let them see your anger. Do not show them your tears, because they do not deserve to see all of you, to see your strength to keep going in a world like this. And so hold on to your words, but do not lose them. Keep them tucked to your side, like the pepper spray you will be taught to always have on you, the key placed between your two fingers, there just in case you have to defend everything you have worked for. To the little girls who will someday rule the world, choose your battles wisely. Find strength in numbers. You are more powerful together. Learn to support one another, to stick together, and stand by each other. Remember to find allies in men, that they aren't all the same. And above all, do not give up. And it won't be easy, but nothing worthwhile is. No matter what they say, you are stronger than thought possible. Always move forward with your head held high. To the little girl crying on the playground, stand up and wipe your tears, because you will use this as a fuel to the fire that will ignite the change you will make and the influence you will be on all the other little girls. You are a girl, will be young adult, will be grown woman, and you will wear that title proudly, and it will feel like a hindrance, like you will be seen differently, but you will use that to make you stronger. Because through everything thrown at you, you will still march forward, and you will smile, not because you were told to, but because you will be beaming with pride, and you will look beautiful, not because you are expected to, but because you have finally recognized yourself as powerful.
Well, that just blew me away. Oh my gosh, that's so beautiful.
Thank you.
Oh. How long was that in the writing? How long was that in the making, I should say?
I wrote that years ago, my sophomore year of college.
Okay.
But it took me a long time. Like, I had all of these thoughts about it. Like, I was like, here are all the things that make me angry. And it took a while. Like, there were definitely stanzas that came to be. But I remember I left it unfinished for a really long time because I didn't know how to finish it.
Right.
Because I was like, I can't, there's no solution. But, you know, my mom was like, you know, make it powerful, make it,
that's
you know,
exactly
a reminder that it's power, you know, so.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's out in the world now. That's so beautiful. Okay. What's next?
So this one is, I wrote it in college for one of my creative writing classes, and it's after a poem called Child Burial by Paula Meehan, which is a sad poem about a child burial. So I did my own version of it, and it's called Childhood Burial.
Nice, I like that.
A funeral. Clad in black, should I cry? Am I supposed to feel broken? As I look at the best version of you, maybe even the best of myself, even in death, we will paint you imperfect. Show your best features for the rest of the world to see. Like all those times I stood toothless and bright, smiling giddy at a hero lucky enough to be my big brother. Holding the world in my eyes, all those times laying in shaggy blue carpet when all my dolls met his race cars. And we created stories, fusing plots that were never written to make sense, just to increase the laughter that bonded us stronger. He always did make me laugh, even when anger got the best of us, yelling after school through popcorn and homework. But we were always good by dinner time. It was always easy to make up. When did that stop? We'll make you pretty with all those nights when he was all I could talk to. It didn't matter that I'd scare him awake in all hours of the night. He'd always soothe worries with reminders that we live in a beautiful world. Reminders that my happy place can be in my mind, but that I don't have to be afraid. Nights when he'd show me songs that became my favorites, when he'd promise there is home in him. No matter what, I'll always have home in him. But now, I look at you. What used to be cherished memories now just look like garbage laying in front of me. Maybe your death came when I decided I'd grown up, that my voice was now mine. Maybe it happened when he stopped seeing himself in me, when I stopped worshiping his every word. Maybe we killed you with all the screaming, leaving scars that never healed. When I started growing up, started to find myself in the pages of notebooks instead of sitting in awe of him. When I grew with pride swelling in my belly, finally becoming someone I could love, he decided I wasn't the same. I changed because I stopped being who he wanted me to be. I killed you, childhood, when I put myself above my beloved big brother. And he killed you when his cruelty crushed the naive little sister I once was. when his apathy shattered the supposed home he claimed I'd always have. We killed you when we burned the sugar-encrusted kits we once were with the memories. Now, clad in black, we don't cry. We don't speak a eulogy, and if I miss you, I won't say it. And instead of a coffin 6 feet underground, I will bury you deep in the caverns of my mind. I do feel the need to say that was written a while ago, and now my brother and I are very, very close. I feel like he's going to be mad.
Oh, dear. Don't tell him not to listen to that part. But it happened.
Right. It happened. But now we're good. He just got married, and we had a very sweet sibling moment. So everything is good now.
Good to hear. And I believe your next is the last poem you're going to read today?
Yes, it is.
Okay, and it has a very long title, you said.
A very long title.
Okay, what is it?
It is called After My Best Friend Sent Me Pictures of All My Favorite People. This is what family looks like. Smiles so wide that teeth ache and cheeks split. Eyes that can barely see through the laugh lines and crinkled noses. And most of the time, if you asked us to locate the punchline, we wouldn't even be able to track where the thoughts came from or when the giggles took over. This is what family looks like, congregated on the corner of a big couch, just to be close enough to whisper secrets and offer comfort when needed, through head scratches, or just leaning into one another. Listening to sad indie music sprawled out in the sunniest spots of the couch. Because sometimes moving and shaking is hard, and even when it's beautiful outside, our internal struggles stay dark. But here, in your presence, listening to the eerie chords of Noah Kahan, it's not so bad. This is what family looks like. Screaming stupid songs at the top of our lungs, windows down and shouting incoherently, because it's hard to be sad while listening to Young Gravy and to Fergie. Walking through the city with calzones twice the size of us, because sometimes eating is hard, but you'll always let me commit to the bit if it makes me feel better. I didn't really know much of a love that didn't hold a user agreement, that didn't force me to sign something away, get stuck with the shortest end of the stick, and still feel honored in some way. So forgive me when my words are wilted and my actions absent. But just know that this is my favorite definition of family, even through all those I've thought I found through the years.
Well, Senna, you're a thinker, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I want everyone to know that Senna's debut book of poetry is available online at both Amazon and Barnes & Noble. The title is The Screams I Whisper. And of course, the author is Senna with a C, Khatib, K-H-I-T-I-B. And it's National Poetry Month, the whole month of April, and you've got plenty of time to read a poem, to write a poem, to whisper a poem to a friend. And as always, our guest has the final word. Senna, what would you like to say?
I would just like to encourage everyone to try to write a poem. And remember, it doesn't need to be something that rhymes or even makes sense. Just some words that sound good together.
Thank you for listening. Stop by again.